Diner.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. Good to have you all with us today on our way to our conversation here in WEAA, celebrating the 88 days of summer. Details at WEAA.org. Reminding you, support for WEAA is provided by AAA Mid-Atlantic. More information at AAA.com/discounts. And a very quick review on this day in history. The biggest event this day in history, as we can see, was on June the 26th, 1948, which is when the Berlin airlift began. Beginning of what people say is the hot cold war we had with the Soviet Union, the United States and the Soviet Union for all those years, maybe heating up again around issues like Syria, but very different politics. That happened on this day. This is the day that James Weldon Johnson died, one of the great poets of our country, passed away on this day, as well as the great jazz trumpeter in 1956, Clifford Brown, who was with Max Roach, produced some fantastic music, one of the great saxophonists of our time. This was a day in history in 1967 when Martin Luther King went to Chicago and was denied the right to speak in almost every church in Chicago except for the Friendship Baptist Church, allowed him in when he was beginning to make that move to fight for workers' rights and economic rights and not just racial rights, and he began trying to create a new kind of movement, and it was denied the right to speak on that day. This is a day when the school systems in 1959 in Prince Edward's County shut down rather than integrate, and we're seeing reverberations of that today with Dixiecrats in control of some sectors of our government, and we're going to talk about that today in this first hour. Let's do that right now. Let's jump right into our program today. We're going to cover both voting rights and affirmative action rulings that came down from the Supreme Court. We have with us here in the studio Michael Higginbotham, the Wilson H. Elkins Professor of Law at the University of Baltimore School of Law, author of the book Ghosts of Jim Crow, Ending Racism in quote-unquote post-racial America. Addison Francois is with us, Associate Professor of Law at Howard University School of Law, and Ari Berman, Contributing Writer for The Nation magazine, Investigative Journalism Fellow at The Nation Institute. And Addison, Michael, Ari, welcome. Good to have all three of you with us.
Thanks, Mark.
And you can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Or jump onto our Facebook pages, which I'll be checking to see if you've got something to say to us there. 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on this voting rights decisions made. Michael, let me begin with you just to outline this decision, what you think it means, and then go to our guest on phone.
Sure, Mark, and it's really good to be here on the show, particularly in a week that is so important to those Americans concerned about civil rights and equal justice. The case basically strikes down the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which is the most democratizing piece of legislation we've ever passed in this country. Right after its passage, over 800,000 new voters were registered in the South. And it's just a tremendous piece of legislation that has increased participation in the American democratic process. What the Supreme Court did in a 5-4 decision yesterday was to strike down Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act, which basically identifies states and jurisdictions within states that, based upon their history of race discrimination in voting, need to have the federal government supervise their election practices. And basically under Section 5, the preclearance aspect, where those states and jurisdictions, if they want to change voting practices, need to get approval from the Justice Department or from a court. Section 5 will no longer really be effective because Section 4 has been struck down. So we don't know what jurisdictions would now be covered for preclearance purposes. That's the tragedy.
And Addison, before we turn to Ari, welcome to have you on the air with us. Talk a bit about your reactions to this, both in terms of our legal history and where this might take us.
My reaction is that I wasn't necessarily surprised, given Justice Roberts' prior decision on this issue. What struck me most in reading the opinion is that the basic theme that Justice Roberts struck in invalidating Section 4B was to say, in the famous line in the opinion, that the history didn't end in 1965, and Congress had not adjusted the coverage formula under Section 4B since 1972, and therefore Congress was sort of out of steps with the times. Justice Roberts also pointed out that several states against whom Section 4B was applicable, mostly southern states, he put out a chart where essentially black voters either were, in terms of percentage, were equal or exceeded the number of white voters in this particular state. Therefore, Justice Roberts saw that as progress. What Justice Roberts failed to point out, however, was that there was a time when, in fact, the same was true. But during Reconstruction, in every single one of those states that Justice Roberts pointed out as having made so much progress today justifying the elimination of Section 4B, black voters indeed outnumbered white voters. And for a long time, they controlled the legislatures in those states during Reconstruction. And the very reason why this ended and basically opened almost 100 years of Jim Crow and political disenfranchisement is because the Supreme Court itself made it end at the end of Reconstruction. So it's almost as if what's happening now is history repeating itself.
And Ari, you've been writing a lot about the politics of this. I mean, this is because we saw, as soon as this happened, we saw Texas that had one of their laws overturned to have voter ID that could disenfranchise hundreds of thousands of people of color in poor people in Texas, reinstated. They're saying this is now our law, and we're going to see what happens in the rest of the South, and not just the South, but across America. So talk about a little bit about the political history and implications of this.
Well, it's going to be absolutely huge political story, particularly in the South. The South is less monolithically red than I think people assume, and the demographics of the South are changing very rapidly. So in the same way that the Voting Rights Act, in many cases, turned the South from Democratic to Republican, the South is shifting back now. And we saw that, for example, with Barack Obama carrying three states of the old Confederacy in 2008, North Carolina, Virginia, and Florida. And so what we've seen is since the 2010 election in particular, Republicans in the South have been very, very aggressive in trying to do, number one, maximize their power through redistricting, through very aggressive racial gerrymandering, and then also passing all sorts of new laws to tighten access to the ballot, whether it be voter ID laws or eliminating early voting or getting rid of same-day voter registration, all of which leads to higher turnout in elections otherwise. And so what's going to happen now is the demographics are going to stay the same as they were. The demographic changes will increase, but Republicans essentially will have a free pass in the South to do whatever they want with their election changes. And that means that basically a third of the entire country will be open season in terms of voter suppression. It'll also have impacts on states that aren't covered by Section 5 because, number one, conservatives are going to go after other parts of the Voting Rights Act, like Section 2, that apply nationwide. So I don't think we should be naive that this is the end of the game to get rid of the Voting Rights Act. The second thing is that when the Justice Department blocked laws like South Carolina's voter ID law and Texas's voter ID law last year during the 2012 election, it really sent a message to all those other states, be careful what you do here. You could be facing future lawsuits either in state or federal court. And it enlightened the public about what was really going on, that this wasn't about protecting the integrity of the election, but rather disenfranchising, in many cases, eligible and registered voters. And so I think the loss of Section 5 is going to have a tremendous impact in the South, but I also think it's going to reverberate outside the South as well.
I mean, I think the political implications of this, I mean, we had just got an email, by the way, at steinershow@gmail.com. You can write it there and call us at 410-319-8888 with your thoughts on voting rights. Art Megidda, a local author and commentator, wrote in, to quote Nina Simone, Mississippi goddamn. So I thought, just read that. And a sense, and leading off from his email to us, what we're looking at here politically, this has been a long time coming. The politics is in some ways. Our Supreme Court Chief Justice Roberts was part of the Reagan White House Justice Department, where he was one of the key young lawyers at that time pushing to end and curtail voting rights, the Voting Rights Act. And he's been dedicated to that since he was a young lawyer. You see the switch in the politics of America where from Nixon's strategy and the Dixiecrats becoming Republicans and becoming the base Republican Party, conservative Democrats, especially in the 80s, moving and becoming Republicans and changing the nature of the Republican Party, and the whole question of race becomes the subtle and sometimes not so subtle issue that's being pushed here. Is there a danger here? We could see what you were alluding to, not alluding to, talking about, Ari, which is that because Republicans in many places and people who are very conservative in many places control a number of state legislators, legislatures, they then control redistricting, which controls, let's say, in Mississippi, how the Mississippi House of Delegates looks and lessening black participation there, controls the congressional districts, which could happen in Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania, not just in the places that were covered by this, affects things at Native reservations, where there are large Native populations, could affect voting for the next 10 years in terms of Latino populations in the Southwest. So this decision could have real political reverberations that will take it outside the jurisdiction in some ways of the courts and maybe even the legislature for a while because of who controls the process.
And I think it's true, Mark. I mean, we're not going to go back to a situation where the number of registered voters plunges from 60% to 6%.
Right, right.
Like it did following Reconstruction. But we are in a situation where virtually the entire South is now controlled by Republicans. They've already done redistricting in such a way after the 2010 election to basically ensure power till 2020. I mean, there's no way that Democrats can take back the southern legislatures based on these current maps. They did such an expert job, even with Section 5, in gerrymandering the map. And so we basically have to push the legislative battles until the next decade. Then there's the question of, well, we saw in the history of the South how much you can manipulate laws and how much you can manipulate the electorate based on the laws. And this means if you get rid of, for example, things like same-day voter registration, things like early voting, you mandate very restrictive terms of ID, you penalize college students for voting where they go to school, all of which North Carolina is now considering. If all those laws were in place, there's no way Obama would have won North Carolina in 2008. If we have very restrictive laws, he may not have won Virginia in 2012. He may not be able to compete as well in Florida, and not to mention what's going to happen on down ballot races, where if there's no Democrats elected, and it's really a one party South, it's going to be hard to field candidates for city council, for county commissioners, for Congress, for governor, for all the different races. And so I think this is a situation where people don't realize how much politicians can actually manipulate the process to control their own power. And between the Citizens United decision and the Voting Rights Act decision, John Roberts is essentially given the greatest gift ever to the most powerful, richest Americans to do everything they can to manipulate the electoral process to really thwart the aspirations of everyone else.
I think Michael, this is such an important point to understand the history that Ari is talking about, because this case is about voter suppression. And if you look at the history of what happened in this country in 1880, when the Supreme Court ruled in Strouder that West Virginia couldn't have a law prohibiting blacks to serve on the jury, but they could, in fact, use age and reading, literacy, and poll tax restrictions. And the legislators of every southern state immediately passed legislation that they knew would significantly reduce or eliminate the black vote. And I think if you look at that history, you see what will be done after this decision has come down. Texas just talked about reinstituting their voter ID. And I think you're going to see many states institute voter ID laws, institute other voter suppression practices, such as restricting early voting and same-day registration, these kinds of things. And everybody knows what the impact will be, and it will be voter suppression in terms of minority voters.
Let me go to the phones here, and then we'll come back to Addison, our next other guest, 410-319-8888. Reverend Meredith, you're on the line. On the air, I should say. Welcome.
Yes, hello. Greetings, all. Good morning.
Good morning.
I am very concerned as a grassroots activist that people don't really understand what this means. So one of the things that I'm trying to get a handle on is how do we message this to ordinary, everyday folks? And secondly, not even understanding what the Voting Rights Act ensures for us, and how really it's not just about African Americans, it's about disenfranchised people, period, marginalized people, period, and, you know, particularly young people, and how this can adversely affect many, many, many years of progress. Melissa Harris Perry had a great article on what we can do going forth, but I'm looking at the 2014 elections and how these states are enacting all these draconian ways to suppress the vote, and thinking, how can we mobilize people now to stop the onslaught? I would take any answers from your guests.
Well, and let me just read this piece that came in on our Facebook page, and let's jump in, because politically I'm curious what, and we'll start with Addison, what you think politically this means for the future and where to go. Leslie Ann writes in on our Facebook page, I watched that Texas spectacle last night, and it looks like there's a full-scale attack going on against every person who is not white, conservative, male. Shameful what we have seen this week. And Gloria Hall writes in, such a political decision, like Bush-Gore, like giving corporations human status, come to mind. I guess I should be happy with affirmative action health care. The impact of voting is too far-reaching. So politically, Addison, what does this mean? I mean, where do people go from here? Because this might be almost extra judicial at the moment.
Well, what it means is that the Supreme Court has thrown it back in Congress to basically fix the coverage formula, which many commentators have pointed out that it's unlikely that Congress has the political will to do so. In terms of mobilizing people to react to the opinion, I mean, it is very important, as Michael pointed out earlier, to really understand how this opinion needs to be grounded in history, because it's a history that Justice Roberts himself ignored. Let's take just a single state, a state that was mentioned by a couple of your guests, Mississippi. In 1898, over 30 years after the end of the Civil War, in Mississippi, there were approximately, in terms of black voters and white voters, 190,000 registered African-American voters in Mississippi, and only 69,000 white voters. That was in 1898. I'm sure folks living at that time, looking at those numbers, never imagined that in a couple of years, by the time construction truly ended, that the numbers would flip radically in terms of the percentage. But it did. It did. Now, I'm not sitting here arguing that basically we're going to have a second and reconstruction, except I myself don't find it that difficult to believe that in a few years, the numbers that we have that Justice Roberts was quoting that shows so much progress based on the VRA are indeed going to be reversed, because it has happened before, and there is no reason why it will not happen again.
410-319-8888. Donna, welcome. You're on the air. Donna, you're on the air. Welcome.
How you doing, Mark Steiner?
Very well. Welcome to the show.
I'm enjoying the show. I had two questions. And one question, and it has to do with the browning of America. That was predicted about 20, 25 years ago. And I wanted to ask your guest, what do they think about the impact of what's happening with the plan that was done by the Republicans and the conservatives for the browning of America? And my second question is, with this taking place in this country, because I talked to a couple of lawyers, civil rights lawyers, and they're saying that we may have to go and start all over again. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna. Michael and Ari, why don't you grab those two things first? You want to go first, Mike, or go to Ari?
Ari, you want to take that first?
Ari, go ahead.
I didn't understand the first question, so I
well, the question, I think, in its spirit was, with everybody talking about the browning of America we've been talking about for a while, I mean, how does that fact of the demographic change in this country shift this debate in the future, and does it shift it?
Well, I mean, I think the demographics of America are why we're having this conversation in the first place.
Yeah, that's right.
Why
right.
The GOP has been passing all these new voter suppression laws. I don't think it's necessarily because all of them are racist like they were during the segregation period. I think it's because they believe this is the best way for them to maintain political power. And so it's beyond even, you know, black and brown anymore. It's encompassing young people now, white college students, for example. example, are now targets because they voted heavily for Obama in 2008. And I think, as I mentioned, the demographics are changing most rapidly often in the South itself. And so that's why we see so many fights about voting in states like Texas, Virginia, North Carolina. These are places that, if they're not already majority-minority, are heading in that direction. So it's very instructive to look at what's happening there. It's kind of a microcosm of fights that we could see all across the country when it comes to demographic change. In terms of the fix here, it's going to be interesting. I mean, the Supreme Court left the door open to rewriting Section 4 to cover states under Section 5. Right now, Section 5 is basically a ghost. It's alive in theory, but there's no body or heart in it because there's no states that are covered. So it's possible that it could be rewritten to cover different states. The problem is that no one knows how it would be rewritten, and secondly, no one knows what would actually pass muster with the Supreme Court, because the Roberts decision basically said, well, we don't like that you haven't updated this, but he didn't suggest why it was unconstitutional or what Congress could even have done differently. Not to mention that it was probably beyond his jurisdiction to even tell Congress that what they did is wrong, given the separation of powers in this country. So I think Congress has to wrestle with, do we try to rewrite this thing and then have it invalidated again by the Supreme Court, or do we try to add other protections that could possibly pass constitutional muster instead?
And that's why this case is really just so sad, because we should be encouraging democracy, encouraging participation, rather than attempting to suppress it and eliminate it. The winner of this case was Shelby County, according to the majority, but to me, the loser is clearly American democracy. And what, you know, what is really just so troubling is that because the demographics are changing, and I think Ari's correct, because the demographics are changing, you're seeing these attempts to suppress voting rights. And Congress has an opportunity now. I mean, a lot of people, you know, look at this as real problematic. But Congress has an opportunity to kind of stand up now and say, okay, the Supreme Court has said racism in voting continues, but we need to reestablish the formula. We need to prove that what's going on today is justified in terms of reestablishing a formula. And this is an opportunity for Congress to stand up and do that. Rather than do what's politically expedient, they should do what is right, and what is right for American democracy. So, you know, I think when you look at the majority opinion saying that racism in voting continues, but we're going to strike down Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act until Congress reauthorizes properly the formula, it's sort of like acknowledging that crime continues. Because it's gone down, we're going to stop having police officers and until you can establish that there is, in fact, crime existing today. So I think it really makes no sense, and it's a very sad decision.
And we have to take, we're just about to go to our break here to go to talk about affirmative action, but I would say, Ari, that you're much kinder and gentler than I when it comes to it. I would say it is political power, but I have to say, I think that undercurrent of this and among folks who oppose this is racism. I don't think it's as simple. I mean, I think that it's deeply embedded in our culture, and it's embedded in our political process. And I don't know, and that's part of what we're battling here, besides, I think, the politics is also just the notion of white supremacy in America. That's part of the battle we're seeing. I mean, it's hard to take that out of this conversation. But we'll leave that for another day and really kind of have that going on. I think we have to take a break here. Do you want to take us a final thought, Addison, before we go to break? We have about 30 seconds.
Yeah, my final thought is that I think this is going to, as your guest suggested earlier, completely realign political power in this country. And my only perspective is that, to me, this is simply a sort of second coming of the end of Reconstruction. That's how significant yesterday's decision was.
Addison Francois, Associate Professor of Law at Howard University School of Law, and Ari Berman, who joins us often. It's always great to have him on the show with us. Contributing writer for The Nation magazine, who writes some of the best things around voting rights in America, is the Investigative Journalism Fellow at The Nation Institute. Ari, great to have you once again as well.
Thanks, Mark. Talk to you later.
Michael Higginbotham has been with us in the studio. He's staying with us for the next half of the show, talking about affirmative action, which we'll be jumping into that case decision right after this brief break. Stay with us.